by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the news.
Upon the cage, every foul wicked spirit in the host, the news.
20 minutes, that door of a on the news. Spread out.
On the ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
They kind of missed the whole point.
To really happen to have a serial crime
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Thanks for tuning in, boys and girls. I am currently trying to figure out if BTR is just having a major issue or if my co-host is, in fact, running late. So we'll chill out for a minute here and wait for Lehi, see if he shows up. I know he's supposed to be meeting up with somebody today, but no mention was made that he would be missing the show one way or the other. I guess while I'm at it, I should apologize for missing Wednesday night's episode of the Praxis Edition. I had a bunch of somewhat urgent issues come up that needed my attention, and I unfortunately didn't have the time to take care of both them and, do the show. It happens. I do really have a real life outside of the internet. No, it doesn't always seem that way, but it is what it is, and I guess I'm flying solo today, which is all fine and dandy. But today we were intending to get into the second chapter of Julius Evola's The Yoga of Power. The second chapter is an interesting one for the fact that there is, a great deal of information about Eastern mysticism provided within this chapter, and specific looking at Shakti, which is something we've been talking about over the past few weeks on the show. Again, I'm trying to bounce back and forth here. It usually helps if I have a co-host hanging on the line, but apparently, Lehi is missing in action, and, it is what it is. So, meantime, let's see if we can't get a little something going here in this show. Before I do that, though, I'd like to acknowledge Tim as Hardcore and tell him to eat my ass, the Mr. Poopy Pants. The Female Beast show happens on Wednesday. So, it is what it is. all right, so where are we at? Shakti, second chapter. The first idea presented by Evola in the second chapter is the idea of the Devi, or the Great Mother. He goes on to state that the starting point is recognized by the acknowledgement that the principal measure of every real being and form is a multiform energy, an acting power that expresses itself in various ways. Now, this is coincidental to what Jason King has been referring to, or not coincidental, but reminiscent, I should say, rather. There we go. Lehi is finally showing up. 5 minutes late, buddy. Dial in. Yeah. Lehi.
Hey, how's it going? Sorry I'm late.
That's all right, man. I somewhat understand. You've got company, so time kind of disappears.
Yes.
The good news is we're talking about the second chapter of this book, so it should be fairly easy. As you know, I'm a big fan of Kali.
Oh, yes. You got that Kali Prime website.
Yeah, I do. I haven't honestly given it much effort lately. I've been working hard on the Eminent Mind thing and then working on a new WordPress site, resource site for the show, or the channel, I should say.
Oh, yeah, whoisradio.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm. So before we get into all that, I guess we should, do our little formalities. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. Got up fresh and early and headed up and got my guest here.
Right on. You weren't, given fingerprints and mug shots before you left or anything, right?
Say what?
They didn't fingerprint you or take a mug shot or anything before you left, did they?
No.
No. All right, that's good. That's good news. I was a little concerned that you might have to deal with that.
No, not yet.
But maybe
someday.
Not yet, no. Maybe. So I just kind of got into, right before you called in, I was talking about the beginning statement that Evola opens the chapter up with, and that he's talking about the idea of Devi or the Great Mother. It kind of goes into the idea that there's this universal kind of multiform energy that's and expressing itself as an acting power throughout all living beings or forms.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? Have you read Jason Sorrell's The Baphomet Codex?
Yes, I have.
So when he's talking about Baphomet, it seems like the same thing. The same kind of idea.
Yeah, it is the same kind of idea. It's actually very similar also, and this is what I was stating just before you called in. It's similar to the idea of the current that Jason King was expressing in his book, Postmodern Satanism. The current in particular, the way that Jason describes it, is kind of an adversarial manifestation, but if you really look harder at what he's pointing at the things that actually are moving or are actually taking action. I mean, there's nothing that happens that doesn't happen through some form of resistance. I mean, when you stand up and you walk across the floor, there's resistance from the bottom of your feet to the earth below you, and that's actually how you're moving forward. The same kind of idea happens when you're listening to sounds. The sound wave meets your eardrum, and that the resistance between those two creates the data that your brain, goes through the whole little censoring process of, and filters it into information that you can understand as being sound. The same can be said about sight and touch. So the idea that the world is in fact constantly in a pivotal state of adversity, in my opinion, is precisely what we're talking about when we're talking about this multifaceted energy that's shared through all being and form.
Yeah, and you could say that it might as well be a universal constant of sorts. We talk about gravity and the weak nuclear force and electromagnetic, all that stuff. It's just as obvious as those kinds of things.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. It's one of those things that you can just kind of look at and realize that it's there, and it's there throughout everything. It's interesting. I had a conversation yesterday on my way back from picking up my child in Fort Myers with my brother, who, he kind of, he's a hardcore atheist, to the point of being fanatical. So he's all about that, everything can be scientifically explained, and, there's no... there's no greater being than man, and
so he's a materialist or a modernist, as another word.
Yeah, he's a modernist. Yes, he He believes that, you know, this is it. This is the pinnacle of, you know, the level of being that you can be on. And, I mean, to me, my ideas are more, you know, that there's another level up, which is like a social organism or I guess a social organism is precisely what I want to describe. And then beyond that, there's a global organism. You know, I look at the outside world every day, you know, just watching the weather, how the wind's blowing, how the trees are moving, how the clouds are moving. You know, look at, you know, weather cycle charts and stuff like that. You see everything's kind of working together in unison.
Yeah, everything's connected.
Everything's connected. And that goes, you know, then into this solar system and then into the galaxy and blah, blah, blah. And it just keeps kind of building out. So I see these constant universal rules and manifesting themselves from the most minuscule levels to the maximum of those ideas. And I think that that in itself, all of that stuff can be and is what is being described as Devi in the, at least in the Vedic tradition. So, I mean, this of course is a novice's opinion and just, my worldview, but from how I've come to understand it, this is precisely what we're talking about.
Yep, all is one.
Right, and...
But all is not one at the same time. It's like the two sides of the coin. I know that people have said that the two sides of the coin analogy isn't quite right, but gives the basic idea that we're all part of the same thing. We're all one, but we also are not at the same time. It just depends how you look at it. We're everything and nothing at the same time.
Yeah, and one of the actual points that was made in the conversation that I had yesterday with my brother was we were talking about a lower and higher being. He was stating that religion was developed to give some kind of enslavement over man. It was a tool used to kind of mold the masses and move them along. And I said, well, you know, that's actually the politics aspect of things. That is not what religion was actually developed for, at least not in my humble opinion. To me, religion was developed to help man move away from the primal nature of an animal and work towards a higher state of being. Things like mathematics and science and philosophy and art and stuff like that, those are all principles of this higher being. And then he rejoined with something that I found to be absolutely true, and it points directly to what you just said, and that is that there is no higher or lower being necessarily. It's all one being, but we categorize it in this way so that we can vector it and think about it and examine it. That's part of our higher functions.
Mm-hmm.
So, with all that being said and done, I'm, you know, kind of skimming through the second chapter to see what the next point we really want to talk about here is. In the meantime, if you have any thoughts, please go ahead.
I did, but I kind of lost the thought.
That happens.
Yes.
That happens. And this moving over to Linux was not a good idea for me, at least not on this laptop. It's crazy.
Did you get your video to work yet?
Getting the video to work, yes. It's choppy. It's kind of crappy. It's kind of, it looks like with the webcam was developed sometime in 1954. It's kind of cool in the aspect that my webcam feed looks like stop animation almost.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm guessing I have to actually track down the driver that came with the webcam to make it work. But I've had issues beyond that. I'm just now trying to Skype into... to the show, I couldn't do it, so I'm calling in on my phone right now. which, as you know, my Skype works because, well, I've called you a couple of times off of it.
Yep.
But for whatever reason.
And cheese does not work.
Yeah, it's choosing not to work, yes. So, anyway, the whole reason I was making the commentary on the Linux in the first place is because as I'm trying to move through this PDF to look at things, it keeps skipping, like, huge numbers of pages.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah. So I'm kind of
so
looking
they go
along
into, let's see. It starts off talking about self-empowerment and traditional knowledge. I guess we can use the first part of the chapter as a jumping point. It says, Tantrism and its emphasis on self-empowerment recaptures and stresses what may be called traditional knowledge of metaphysical rather than profane nature.
Right on. Well, I'm actually taking a look because he does do a little bit of comparison between Tantrism and the older Hindu metaphysical systems. He explains that the systems didn't stop at concepts of being in person. It's the counterpart of being is non-being. Beyond both of them, we find the absolute, which is Brahman, which is neuter. I guess what he's saying is it's neutral
and stagnant.
And Brahma. What's that?
I think I said it was neutral and also stagnant. I don't think that's the word he used, but that's what I got out of it. That it's in between, so it's neutral. I guess we'll stick with that word.
Yeah, well, the word he used was neuter, and I think for specific reason there wasn't a masculine or feminine tone to it. It was just kind of there. There was not. He also explains that Hindu metaphysics didn't employ a theistic notion of God. In other words, there, wasn't that anthropomorphic.
Not like Yahweh.
Trait attached to it, like Yahweh, or something more whole. And this is again something I was discussing last night in my conversation. So it's kind of interesting that we're coming through this in this chapter. What we got here? Blah, blah, blah. There's something. Brahman is something that transcends the personal deity and is thought of in terms of primordial and abyssal energy. So I'm guessing, the Hindu idea was that all things kind of came from this never-ending source of energy.
Oh yeah, that's
and,
right.
And that
Brahman as opposed to Maya.
As opposed to Maya, yes. Yeah, which Maya is, as we know, illusion or construct, and as we talked about last show, that argument's pretty easily knocked down.
That was it was brought down by because if you are residing in Maya, you can't observe it as such because then that would in itself be an illusion. So it's
it's completely self-defeating. If everything's an illusion, then nothing can actually be accomplished. Is the way that it kind of breaks that down.
Yep.
If it's all imaginative, if everything's just a product of your mind and those little, neurons firing back and forth, then, you'll never really be able to get to anything.
Yep.
That's his argument there, and I'm kind of just breezing through this. This is again, I got so frustrated with this damn Skype earlier. My concentration's kind of broken off. Let's see what we got. The primacy derives from the capability of giving birth and from being thought of in a cosmic context as an incubating womb.
Which page are you on?
I'm reading page 21 right now.
Oh, you're a bit further than I am. Huh? I'm gonna skip to that so I can be on the same page as far as conversation goes. Oh, page 21.
I wasn't trying to really run this like a book study, but it seems like anymore that's what this is becoming. So for those of you that are interested in one of you or read along, if you go to the Mendez site in the library right there in the featured PDFs, you can download this very book that we're talking about and catch right back up with us. And if you're lazy and you give me a minute, I will drop a link in the chat room for it, and then it'll be even easier. But unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to actually save Mendez into my bookmarks, so I've got to pop on the sin, click the little library button, and then go from there.
Okay, quick question. When you say page 21, you mean as what it shows on the, like when you look at the bottom of each block of text, or in like the little right sidebar thing?
Well, first, we've got, it looks like we've got FS calling in, so I'm going to go ahead and bring her out there.
Right on.
And then I'll answer your question as I do a little comparison. What's going on?
Oh, not much. I started reading it, so I definitely want to listen to y'all, but I'm on about page 10, so.
All right.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
To answer your question, Lehi, it's at the bottom of the page.
Okay, gotcha. So that's in chapter 3 then, right?
Chapter 2.
Because on mine, page 21 is in chapter
3. All right, let's see if we can get this lined up. If you're looking at the where it says at the very top of your PDF reader, 36 of... it would be page 36 of 255.
So that is in chapter 3.
The top paragraph should read, not stop at the concept of being in person. The counterpart of being sat is non-being.
Yep, that's chapter 3. Shakti, the world of power.
How do we move to chapter 3?
I don't know.
That's fine. We've sufficiently covered all of the information that they kind of...
You all right there, FS?
What's that?
You all right there, FS?
Hang on. I can't hear you. I've got the kids at the park, so it's kind of loud.
That's what we're hearing.
Yeah.
So anyway, we were talking about Brahman, Maya, the masculine feminine differentiation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Where did you leave off, Beast? I kind of derailed this.
I was getting into the fact that for a long time Shakti kind of had lost its primacy, the relationship that it had with the feminine element. In the ancient civilization, it was a very feminine characteristics that were associated with the idea of Shakti, and then as they moved into a more orthodox school, it kind of derailed from that, and it became more associated with just a universal energy. But in specific, I was kind of getting to the point that from that perspective, and I'm having trouble collecting my thoughts today. So, perspective, on a cosmic level, we could kind of look at it as like an incubating womb that things were constantly growing and being given birth to.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of interesting how Shakti is also like compared that way as being, as they say, one without a second. being the origin, like, it's kind of like Baphomet, you know, the source of all.
Yeah, kind of right. I believe that Jason Sorrell, being the longtime student of the occult that he is, probably definitely had this concept in mind when he was putting together his idea of what Baphomet is. As a matter of fact, I believe that there's a heavy connection there, which is done on purpose, because it's something that is in fact sort of, well, I don't know, it's a constant running thing through the entire tradition of left-hand practice, or not even left-hand practice, but more specifically through esoteric practice. You know, when you think about what the Knights of Templar had going on, at least as far as, you know, history's rumors have gone with their worship of the dead female, and their worship of, you know, the Virgin
Divine
Mary. Yeah, I mean, there's a constant connection there. There's something about the feminine element which is alien to the male perspective, which I think is enjoyed when interacted with. You know, there's the idea of intuition and nurture and, you know, development from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we as males, we make everything rigid. We make everything very training oriented,
left
brain. Analytical. Yes. Yeah. Well, there's more of a creative force. Please.
Oh yeah. I would certainly agree with that. That I think that a large part of, I don't know, the misappropriation of women just in general within, I don't know, like the, I don't know, like collective mind, so to speak, I think stems a lot from the fact that both men and women really don't understand each other or where they're coming from. There's something, and it's not much, I really don't think, but there's an innate difference between the way that each sex approaches the world in general and just, you know, pretty much any subject at all.
Right on. I would absolutely agree with that, but I mean, for the purposes of our examination here, I'm just trying to kind of stick to the ideas being presented by Evola. So, if there's anything contradictory, it's obviously just what he was thinking, or my interpretation of such, which, you know, sometimes can be a little far off.
The other thing that's interesting is that reading literally this page, earlier in the book, you were talking about how Shakti is kind of like the next step from the last two. You got the feminine Kali, and then the masculine Shiva, and then you have Shakti. So kind of like a product, or the next, as the JK is the next. But when we get into this part, it's talking about how Shakti is really the root of everything. So she is the source, but also the next step. It seems kind of interesting.
Well, I'm gonna kind of step in and say that maybe that is a I don't know, a misunderstanding that's been presented to you. Shiva's actual counterpart, his actual wife, is Shakti.
I see.
Kali is a manifestation of Shakti, as a reaction to the things that pissed her off.
Okay.
The same thing goes with Durga, that they are forms or manifestations of the same being. It's like
okay, I got you. Shakti. So Shakti is the energy between the two forms.
Well, Shakti is the energy, or Shiva is the consciousness and the form, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. the best way that I can explain this is in my last job as a fireworks manager, I had to put on different hats from time to time. If the electrical needed working on and I didn't have time to call an electrician and wait for them to come out, I would put on my electrician hat, so to speak, and go do electrical work. It's that same kind of concept where, you know, if you're
I'm sorry.
Come again.
I was saying so Shakti is just manifested through those forms.
Shakti is manifested through those forms, and it depends on what specific function we are trying to accomplish and what manifestation it takes. Like my particular fascination with Kali is the destructive, corrosive element that ultimately leads to fresh new creation. It is the idea that nothing can be knocked down without having to build something up in its place.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take something away and just have an empty void. Something fills its place. A good example of this is if you fill a glass of water, or if you fill a glass with water, and then you take a cube of sugar and you drop it in there, some of the water will spill out of the top. And the reason that that is because there's always has to be something contained in that area.
Yep.
It cannot... You can't just have a hole in it.
Right, because of displacement.
Displacement. Yeah, so real quick, I'm trying to think here. It looked like we had a lot more guests when we started off here on the show today, and it's thinned out a little bit. I wonder if this has anything to do with the idea that there might be some drama here on the news. I'd hate to tell them, but we're moving past that.
Yep.
Now, I'm with the Shakti. I'm trying to think. Here's another good example of the difference between Shiva and Shakti. Shiva is infinite. There is no definition to it. It is all-encompassing and is everything. Shakti is the action that makes it finite. So it's like if you draw a line across a piece of paper, that line going across the piece of paper plus the entire rest of the piece of paper is Shiva. But that thin point where that lead is, that finite line, that distinction that is made, that is Shakti.
So Shakti is the root of every finite existence.
Yes. Shakti is the root of every finite existence.
So basically, we can say that while there are universal constants and forces, like we can compare constants with gods or whatever, but Shakti is the interaction.
Yes.
The punctuation.
Yes, exactly. Shakti is the defining element. The action. This is why I ultimately think I derailed myself. Bear with me, guys. We'll get through this show today.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It says that that the other gods wouldn't exist without Shakti, and I guess basically, yeah, if there were just a bunch of constants that were isolated, there would be no distinction between them.
Right. It's also something. It also points to something that Female Satan here, Jeanette, actually stated just recently on one of her comments to something that was going on in Sin, and that is that imperfection in itself is actually, that's the beautiful thing. That's you know, that shows that there's room to grow. That gives it the ability to manifest one way or the other. If everything was already perfect, there would be...
It might as well not exist.
Yeah, there's no need for continuation. You know, when a project's done and it's done to its perfect state, do you need to continue beyond that?
Nope. And then it ceases to be a project anymore.
Precisely. So that's not what I was initially getting ready to say, but since I derailed myself, we'll move along. let's see what else we got going on here. All right. He then starts to talk about how Shakti manifests through each of the three main principles, Vishnu, Brahma, and, of course, Shiva. So when Shakti is manifesting through Brahma, you have the creation. Now, if I remember right, that is Durga.
I think so.
Vishnu is the maintained state. And I can't for the life of me remember what the goddess's name there is. And Shiva is the destruction.
I thought the three main male deities in that... I thought it was Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva.
Yes, Shiva. Yeah, that's what I just said. Shiva destroys the universe. So Brahma's creation, Vishnu is neutrality.
Well, I thought it was reversed. I thought it was Vishnu that created and Brahma was the neutral.
Right, well, not according to what I'm reading here. It's Brahma creates, Vishnu maintains, and at the end of things, Shiva destroys. So,
oh, I see. Oh, I could have swore it said something different earlier. Yeah, you're right. I read it wrong.
Yeah, so, you know, the interesting thing here is that all of this kind of, again, wraps around and points to the fact that we all strive for this ideal state, and it just doesn't exist. If we were to reach that ideal state, we would no longer have purpose. And I think that's kind of the coolest part about looking into this whole thing.
Yeah, it's like people trying to reach gnosis, or people who are transgressing, whatever you're trying to do, there is no end goal. It's constant striving.
Right on.
So without Shakti, there is no creation, maintaining, or destroying. But she is the power.
And, you know, it's interesting because looking into the Eastern traditions like I have been, over the past few years, the more I examine them, the more I move away from the idea of self becoming God. You know, because in my mind, God or divinity is the ideal state. And again, I don't want to reach that. I want to become more human. I want to make mistakes and learn from my mistakes and build from there.
Yep.
So that's why
I'm trying to be God, and we can learn to be man.
Yeah. I mean, and that's actually kind of contrary to what this book ultimately points to. This book ultimately points to self-supremacy, which I guess in his idea was more of becoming your own God. But again, that is, you know, contrary to what I actually believe. We'll continue on through.
Maybe
through
it makes
this here.
Maybe saying it that way makes it more salient to people who pick it up. Who knows?
That's very possible. Again, I can't claim to know. You know what?
Yeah, I'm just speculating.
Yeah, it's quite possible.
I don't know, Beast.
It
seems to me in a way that your goal is to almost. I don't know how to explain it. It's like you. you describe you want to be more human. And to me, that almost sounds like a godly state in and of itself. It's more of an honest embracing of what humanity really is. And, I don't know, just to me it sounds like not only is that more real, but in a way that is, you know, probably closer to that whole self-godhood concept. And I think, you know, finding out that you have nothing more to obtain is that you have a realistic view of it and you know that you're a human being and that it's good and okay and that you were kind of created to be perfectly imperfect.
I think that's a very salient point there. And that's kind of what I was trying to express. So I can't really offer any argument against what you're saying. I mean, the whole thing of it is that it seems to me, and again, it seems to me that everyone is born and lives their life on this quest to discover who they are, that they spend their entire lives figuring out who they are, you know, what's important to them, you know, what things make them. No one has it all figured out ever. I mean, I talk to my grandfather a lot. He's 85 years old now. And he's still trying to figure out who he is. He surprises himself from time to time.
Oh, yeah, no, and it seems that that's that question. That's actually why I made that post, because I don't know, it always seems to me like people decide they're perfect and then they just stop. And, you absolutely can't do that, you know. There's always something going on that you could learn from, especially if you have the right mindset for it.
Right. And I think that's the beautiful thing about the mind is that you have the ability to change it. It's not stuck in one mode ever, and nor should it be. You know, what you think about what separates us from, you know, all of the rest of the creatures on this planet, it is the fact that we can, with enough effort, change our stripes, where the tiger cannot.
Oh, yeah. No, that I do think is the main difference between humanity and other creatures. I also think that it's an under-recognized fact, you know. Like, I read a lot of posts, you know, or stuff by people that are saying, you know, that their goal is, you know, I've even done it. I want to get as close to who I really am as possible. And, yeah, I that's obtainable, but there'll just be, you know, there'll be new stuff piled on top at that point. You know, and I really think that that's a lot of where, you know, the concepts of, well, it's actually what I like about Kali quite a bit is that there's a reverence within the Eastern traditions for something that could almost be considered dirty or broken or nasty or somehow, you know, I mean, she relates so closely to Satan in a way as an archetype, but instead of being eschewed, it's celebrated there.
Right, and that's the important element is the celebration there. You know, the conversation that I had last night, again, I'll kind of point back to it because we had one of the overarching disagreements between himself and I is that he believes that murder that's unjustified is wrong. In other words, if other people can't look at that murder and say, well, he had a good reason for doing it, then that's wrong. But I was trying to point to the fact that he, you know, that's giving someone power over you. And,
yep.
You know, when you allow other people to decide for you whether what you've done is wrong or right, you've given away one of the, one of the treasures of life.
You know, what's interesting about what you guys are talking about is further in this chapter, it's talking about how Shakti is not held down by any laws and also has been shown to be playful.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about celebration and people, and you're talking about how killing somebody, somebody tells you that it's wrong. Well, no. You're letting somebody else dictate to you what is. rather than this unrestrained, playful power. I don't know. Maybe it's a bad parallel, but that's what I was reminded of.
Well, I think the playfulness of it is the what happens when you play with something. You experiment with it, you interact with it, and you do so in a way that's enjoyable. You do so in a way that you're gaining something directly from it. And so I don't disagree with your analogy at all.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so it does fit in with that part.
It seems to, yeah. Let's see. So I also think it's interesting, later on in this chapter, he starts to actually kind of break down the human condition, and he actually states there's, you know, humans, subhumans, or as he calls them, Deveriers, if I'm saying that right, and that is people who are reaching for that higher self that we were discussing earlier. So it's interesting because from a fourth wave perspective, you would look at this as being the sleeper, being the subhuman.
The mundane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The mundane. And then you have people who have reached a state of actualization, and those would just be humans. And then you have the people that are trying to transcend, trying to become more human than just a human.
Mm-hmm.
And so I forget if it was in the beginning of this book or if it's later on that he's talking about, you know, finding that state that most Hindus and stuff go for in the afterlife or after death in life itself. And I believe that this is very much what he's talking about, becoming more human than human.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's in the first chapter now that I'm kind of tearing through this. But for whatever reason, it's in there somewhere. Where are we at?
You're talking about the different levels of human.
Yeah, the different levels of humans. No, I was, because there's not really a lot of inference there. He just kind of makes the statement and dances beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
Starts talking about Nataraja, which I guess is a dancing god. And the idea of Nataraja is that the freedom, the uninhibited freedom. And he makes the correlation that it is very much like Shakti in that it is naked or unbound. And
mm-hmm.
So where are we with that? So, yeah, it considers that state to be a representation of the unfolding of manifestations. So the unbound mind creates, the unbound body moves, the unbound heart loves, you know. It's that kind of thing that it's only when you place certain restrictions upon yourself that you kind of take away from the Shakti. So this whole argument being made by Evola in the second chapter is a direct argument for self-government, for self-rule, or rather, not even self-rule as much as self-sovereignty, you know, having the freedom to be yourself, to act as yourself. And so he kind of wraps it all up into these neat little Hindu terms that, you know, you could spend a week wikiing and still not understand entirely.
Yeah, I need to do that.
Yeah, so that's that. I'm trying to think of where we're at. Well, not really where we're at in terms of in the book, but time. I think we've only got about 10 minutes left. I'd like to welcome any callers at this point. 347-989-1371 if you have something, you know, to say on this particular subject matter or if any of my interpretation of Evola is incorrect, then, you know, I'd like to hear the difference. And in the meantime, I'm going to dig here real quick and see, because I know we can't be at the end of this chapter already, what other ideas we might have to present.
There's a lot more in chapter 3.
What's that?
From my perspective, there's a bit more in here.
Yeah, what else do you, what else immediately sticks out to you?
Nothing at the moment. I didn't quite look through it this morning. I didn't have a chance to go over it again to put my thoughts together, so.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, as it is, I think this is probably a good stopping point for the time being. This way, next weekend, we can, actually, I think next weekend, we're taking a break from this, and Jason King is going to join the show again.
Finally.
And finally, yes, and we're going to get into part two of The Origins of Christianity. So a little break from Eastern mysticism that'll give you, Lehi, a chance to get, you know, a couple more chapters up on this book.
Yep, I definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, in the meantime, since Tim is hardcore, is probably at least listening in, I can throw out that he needs to be there if he wants to participate. Okay, we're going to go ahead and stop here. We've got about 8 minutes left in the show, and I'm thinking need to mention that tomorrow night on what would normally be the Outbreak edition, we will have a special guest. The first highlight edition in, I don't know, over a month. It will be E.A. Coetting, international occult writer, well, internationally renowned occult writer and black magic practitioner. It should be interesting. He, from my conversations with him through whatever, Facebook and then on the phone, it seems like he's going to be a rather interesting character. If you guys enjoyed Warlock Asylum, when he interacts with us, then you'll most certainly enjoy E.A. Coetting.
And that's tomorrow night?
That's tomorrow night. That's correct.
That's exciting.
11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I then want to make mention that next week we will not have an instance like this week. We will, in fact, have our normal Tuesday Luminous and then the Wednesday Praxis edition following. FS, I saw you carried on with the show. I haven't had a chance to actually go back and listen to the archive and find out if you went ahead with the subject matter we were originally discussing or if you decided to talk about something different.
Now, Jason grabbed the switchboard because I don't have the codes for that. So we were actually talking about the Occupied movement, and I don't know if you heard about it, but there was a video that went up, the Hotties of the Occupied Edition. That's what we were talking about. We decided to, I told him what our topic was, and he said it would probably be better for us to do that next the next show. So.
Okay. All right, yeah, that sounds good. So then this coming Wednesday, we're getting back into imports.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. I'm trying to think, is there any other little announcements that need made?
Not that I can think
anything
of.
Anything that? No? All right. Well, then I'll just again point to satanicinternationalnetwork.com, eminentmind.info, female-satan.wordpress.com.
No, I'm on Blogspot.
Oh, it's on Blogspot. Sure. You need a WordPress. That's what it is.
I know, I do.
Wait, wasn't there something really weird at that address?
Blogspot, not Blogspot. Blogspot is a collection of Christian hymns that I found when I accidentally typed in my address wrong. Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. Yeah, I didn't even know this was here. That's why I posted on the wall, because I was like, somebody hijacked my blog. No, I typed in the wrong address. But still, wow, but I'm also getting spam now from some Christian group on my blog, so I'm actually considering turning the comments off of it. It's funny, but it's starting to get a little annoying, actually.
That's hilarious.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what... what is kind of amazing to me is I have held a website, at maybe not the same address, Fear the Beast was the longest running at like 7 or 8 years. For the past decade, though, I've held a website which has contained, left-hand path content, and sometimes, depending on which phase of my own learning it was, very, very sinister ideas and stuff like that. And I've never, ever had commentary from any kind of Christian fundamentalist. The most I ever had was a Muslim guy contact me by email, and he actually wanted to talk about how to get into Satanism. So.
Oh, that's bizarre. I think somebody did that on Sin once. There was a guy who claimed to be Muslim who wanted to get into it like a while ago.
Yeah, this was probably 5 or 6 years ago that this happened, and I turned him on to what was then The Devil's Handbook, which was Jason Strell's collection of essays at that time, The Satanic Bible. I'm trying to think of what other texts I pointed him to. It's been so long, I don't remember, but those two stick out because I always try to plug my friends whenever I can. So
that's strange.
Yeah, it was kind of awkward, but it was probably about a dozen email exchange, and then he was off to do his own thing.
Have you heard back from him ever?
No, I never heard back from him.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, though,
Yeah, it is pretty neat. I guess he felt there's a certain level of approachability or something with me because he just kind of out of the blue hit me up. If I remember correctly, it was through the Beware the Beast site that I used to do, which was a collection of lesser-known satanic artists poets and models and stuff like that being showcased. That's actually how I met Jason Sorrell was by asking him to join that. So, kind of interesting in that. So, pointing back to that, that was 01, 02, something like that. That site died in 04, I think. Just nobody was interested in satanic art, I guess. No, you know.
Do you think that people would be into that because a lot of people that get into Satanism care a lot about the aesthetics?
You would think so, certainly. My whole idea actually was to see any kind of movement really grow. There usually has to be a creative or artistic aspect attached to it. If you think about the Renaissance period, if you think about the Industrial period, if you think about the Victorian period, there is a constant underflow of artistic expression in that particular culture that's being developed. And so that was kind of what I was working towards. But apparently we're not as interested in culture as I'd like to believe.
Yeah.
You made a
point there.
Well,
I try to make music.
Okay. We'll go with Lehi first.
Oh, what I was saying? Oh, I was saying,
yeah.
As far as culture goes, I do try to make some music. I haven't made a lot of progress lately. But I think that... you're trying to get a message across, it gets a lot better. I think it's easier to get someone to listen when it's more pleasing, like through a music form. I mean, because you can, while like philosophizing and being rational and whatever is good to do and it turns some people on, other forms might be a better way to get a message across or an emotion.
Right on. And then FS, what were you saying?
Oh, I was saying that maybe you were ahead of your time because And I don't know. I haven't participated that long, but it does seem to me like the subculture's grown large enough at this point to maybe handle something like that. And I personally have a lot of interest in culture coming out of this subculture. I think it's really important because I think that as long as, we're all picking out of society's culture to build it, to build the culture that we're using, I think that it's a self-defeating process ultimately.
Right on. We are out of time, guys, so I'm going to roll that outro, and thank you very much.
Hey, have a good weekend. We'll catch you tomorrow night.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but this is the oldest question to us. A special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?